case, CFTC versus Lakeshore Asset. Mr. Elkin? You're waiting for something?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are you waiting for something?
I just thought that the court was still pulling its papers together. I apologize. May it please the court, I'm Michael Etkin on behalf of AnBank. I'll use the shortened name. And as a housekeeping matter, I would just like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal as opposed to the 1 minute
sure,
because there was an adjustment
fine.
In time.
You can have what you want. That's
Your Honors, fundamental to the underlying receivership.
Can I just ask you a little? The CFTC is the receiver, is it? Is it the actual? I thought there was this other company, Evans, in here.
Yeah, Evans is the receiver.
Yeah, the receiver. What is the Commodity Futures Trading Commission doing in the case?
Your Honor, I believe, but that's best left for the appellee. I believe that they commenced the proceeding against the Lakeshore entities.
Oh,
put them into the
receivership. Because of the fraud.
Correct,
right,
Your
but
Honor.
They're not involved in this. In our,
they're not a party.
In our, okay.
Not a party.
It's just that they're on the case name. Pardon me. Okay, sorry.
Correct. But the receiver is the Evans entity. And Your Honor, is fundamental to that underlying receivership. Is the fact that it is an equitable proceeding, and its purpose is to liquidate the assets of the Lakeshore entities for the benefit of defrauded investors. There is no dispute that AnBank is a defrauded investor to the tune of close to $7 million. And there is no dispute that AnBank, as a defrauded investor, known to the receiver, is one of the many intended beneficiaries of this receivership.
What's troublesome about your case, this is a sophisticated, modern, banking enterprise, in a tax haven, I suppose. And it's got an impressive website. It's got its own building. It looks like a sophisticated enterprise. Why wouldn't an enterprise like this be keeping tabs on this claim, right? They did receive the notice that they were listed as a creditor of this defunct and corrupt enterprise. And years pass, they don't do anything. You'd think, Mr. Mora would assign someone in his office, say, look, we have this proceeding going on in the United States, and you keep tabs on it and find out every few months what's going on. But no, instead they just sit there.
Your Honor, from a factual perspective, they were not aware of the receivership proceeding.
But they're aware that they had lent money or invested money with this fraud, and they learned that. That it was a fraud and that the government has taken it over, and they assume, according to your brief says, they assume, your bank assumes, that okay, money is controlled by the U.S. government, so we'll get it eventually. That's the assumption. That's fine. But again, you think it's a sufficient amount of money. It's not gigantic, but sufficient amount of money that you'd have someone in your in the bank keeping tabs on it, on their claim, as they would with other loans.
Your Honor, as there really wasn't much, if anything, on the record as to the level of sophistication of AnBank and whether they may be sophisticated in certain aspects of their business.
Oh, no, no. You just go to their website and you read all their financial stuff about value at risk computation. It's obviously a sophisticated company.
Correct, Your Honor, but not necessarily sophisticated in terms of receivership proceedings in the United States.
Oh, but they have this strange idea. Andorran law presumably is French, right?
It is French and Spanish, Your Honor.
Spanish. Well, they're very similar. Okay. So they know that America. I mean, why would they assume that American law was identical to Andorran law? American law isn't identical to French or Spanish law. It just seems so unprofessional.
Well, Your Honor.
And in fact, they obviously do business in the United States.
I don't know the extent to which they actually do much business in the United States, Your Honor.
Not much, but you know, every international bank has business in the United States.
I don't think they've been exposed to a fraud of this magnitude. But let me get to Your Honor's point, and I understand it. And one from a distance could very easily ask themselves, why didn't they do this and why didn't they do that? But the point here, and I think with the fundamental mistake with respect to the court below, is ignoring the basic principle that where you have a known creditor, as AnBank was, they are entitled to actual notice. And they did not get actual notice.
Well, I don't think that's precise. I think what is true is that the receiver had a duty to use a proper method of notifying the bank. But that doesn't mean that it's a duty to ensure that that the notice is received, right? The duty to notify and notice and receipt are two different things. You have a duty to notify, but through no fault of yours, the notice may not actually be received by the intended recipient. So the question is, you know, who's more at fault? They, for their mode of notice, their method of notice, or you, for your management of how your bank handles FedEx packages when they come in? Apparently, there's nothing in the record about, am I right? There's nothing in the record about your mail room or...
What there is in the record, Your Honor, aside from the lack of receipt of the actual notice, is the fact that, and there's no dispute as to this, that the National Futures Association was consulted by the receiver for contact information. Mr. Mora certified that the instructions to the National Futures Association as to AnBank was that all communications should go to him directly to his name. That was not done here. That was the standard practice. That was what was conveyed to the NFA. It did not happen here.
Is there a document that in which he notifies the NFA that he's the contact person for Lakeshore Asset Management?
There is no document, Your Honor. It's in his certification. I should just point out that below we did request an evidentiary hearing in connection with all of this. The judge declined and decided the motion on the papers. So what we have is what's in the certification, which is undisputed, and what's attached to the certification.
Well, of course, the bank didn't have those instructions, or Mr. Mora didn't have those instructions on file with the funds that were the subject of this receivership. So the information that they had was just to send it to this address in Andorra, which is what they did via International FedEx, and it was signed for and delivered.
It was not signed for, Your Honor, by any employee of AnBank.
Well, there's prima facie evidence that it was. It was delivered to the last known address that was on file with the funds that are the subject of the receivership, and it was signed for and accepted. There are FedEx receipts to that effect. I know there's a dispute about, you know, whether the person whose name appears on the receipt says the individual who signed for them is actually employed by the bank, but I mean, this is at least prima facie evidence of delivery.
Your Honor, but that would...
So your problem is you don't have the signature.
And in fact...
That's a serious problem, because what happened, as we all know, you know, you sign this, I don't know what you call it, you know, little machine, you sign, you scribble your name, and then someone tries to figure out what the name is. And the fact that the typed receipt says C stamp doesn't mean that that's the name of the person who signed it.
It goes even further, Your Honor. It goes, but if you look at the FedEx receipt, which was annexed to the Mora certification, that's at page 730 of the record, Exhibit 4. It even says on the FedEx receipt.
Wait, 730. This is in the appendix.
It's on the record at page 730. Your Honor, I don't know whether it's in the appendix, Exhibit 4.
Well, I've looked at it, but I can't. Oh, here, I don't know why. It's RA-153 in the appendix. I don't know where you're getting the 753.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Whatever it is. Yeah, what about this?
It says that no signature is available.
Right.
No signature is currently available for the shipment. Please check again later for a signature.
Right. That doesn't mean there's not a signature, right?
Well, no signature was produced, Your Honor. No signature was produced by the receiver. And there is undisputed testimony in the certification that there is no C stamp at Anbank. So,
but what we don't know is why we don't know why the signature is unavailable. Whether whoever delivered it didn't give it to Federal Express, or it was illegible, or you know it didn't record, right?
We don't know, Your Honor, and this is what was provided to us by
but
the receiver.
You didn't present any evidence about your mailroom procedures.
That's correct, Your Honor. There was no evidence produced in the motion papers, but again, there was no evidentiary hearing.
You'd think that if minimal care would say that when Mr. Mora learns that the funds have been frozen, control of the U.S. government, and so on, that he would make sure that the receiver had a contact person at the bank. Since the only address given Lakeshore was just the bank without a name. So you'd think, you know, kind of elementary caution would say, well, the only address they have is the bank without a contact person. Now, maybe they'll check with NFA and find Mr. Mora's name, but, you know, check up on it.
That, in fact, was the position of the receiver, that they checked with NFA, and they should have found Mr. Mora's name, but they didn't. Your Honor, the facts are that AnBank never knew about the pendency of the receivership proceeding. The CFTC, although they called AnBank, right, never told them about it. The Lakeshore employee, although they spoke with her, this is in the certification, never mentioned a receivership proceeding. So they had no idea that there was a receivership proceeding.
Time later, but we'll have to hear from Mr. Bausch. Is it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Etkin.
May it please the Court, Paul Bach on behalf of GAMEG Black White LTD. Your Honor, this is an equity receivership, and an equity receivership is essentially a procedural device that the courts use to allocate and distribute the assets of an insolvent entity according to typically state, federal, or in this case, the laws of other jurisdictions' entitlements. The first inquiry that a court must make in these cases is to basically classify the various claimants. And the most fundamental
so classification. Why did GAMEG, what do you call it?
GAMEG, Your Honor.
GAMEG, okay. So why did GAMEG set up its interest in this, in Lakeshore differently from the other investors are shareholders, and you say you're a creditor, and you do have a different arrangement. But why did GAMAG do that?
Why do we do it differently? Because we did not want to invest in their commodity pools. We use Lakeshore not as a commodity pool operator, Your Honor, but as essentially a commodity advisor.
But you knew they were going to invest the money. They weren't going to put it in Treasury securities.
That is correct, Your Honor. But they were.
You knew there was an investment risk you were taking. You were taking the same investment risk as the shareholders.
Right, and we didn't lose any money because of that investment risk. Our agreement was that we would have a separate custodial account. We retained title to those assets. We could withdraw them at any time. They were not commingled with any investors' funds, and they were, again, as an advisor.
Well, they were commingled, of course.
Well, improperly, Your Honor. I mean, the money went to Sentinel.
Yeah, well, okay, they were frauds. Everything was improper.
No question,
about
there was a fraud. Here.
But why is your? I don't know why your status is different, except in some, you know, hyper technical sense from the shareholders. You were taking fraud risk and you were taking investment risk.
Well, Your Honor, in our situation, we did not invest, and we cited the Holiday Mart cases, other cases where shareholders who were also defrauded. We're trying to elevate their claims, claiming, well, I would have never invested had I known what was going on, so I want to step up with the other creditors. The key distinction here, which is not hyper-technical, is creditors are paid in full first. Shareholders are paid second, and shareholders are not allowed to step up.
It's not a flat rule. It's not a flat rule. This is an equity receivership, and you try to figure out the business realities of it rather than getting hung up on labels.
Well, Your Honor, even in an equity case, we still...
Your funds were being invested in the same way as the shareholders, and you're saying that, well, they were actually insuring you against losses.
Well, Your Honor,
fraud.
Everyone that dealt with Lakeshore was having their money invested in the market. The way we invested, though, was different. We had a separate account.
What difference does it make? The money in the account was commingled with the money of the other investors, and
it wasn't invested. It wasn't self-directed. You
that is
authorized
correct.
By it, agreement
it's
the fund
same
to
way.
Make all the investment decisions, and that puts you on the same footing as the other investors.
It doesn't, Your Honor. In any bankruptcy case, creditors put their money into a bankrupt company, as do the shareholders. All that money is commingled, but when we distribute it out, the creditors are paid first. That's their bargain. Had we purchased common stock, we would have to pay all of the creditors first. We would get what's left. If we were a creditor, if I was the landlord that had leased property to Lakeshore.
This lake asset thing is not a. This is not a standard corporation. It has shareholders, and then it goes out and it sells bonds and it borrows from banks and this and that. And the shareholders know that there are these creditors and they have priority and all that. This is an investment pool. The other shareholders, they didn't know you had some special arrangement, right? They didn't know that this investment pool was going to have preferred investors, and that the other investors would be insuring these preferred investors?
Well, I think they did, Your Honor. If I buy stock by common shares...
What do you mean they did? How did they know?
How would they know?
Yeah.
It's a matter of general knowledge of the marketplace. If I purchase common stock, I know that whatever general obligations the company runs up are going to have
they're
a priority.
They're buying common stock in a corporation. They're buying into an investment pool... And you're buying into the same pool. You're just calling yourself a creditor. And, of course, the company, especially since it's fraudulent, they'll call you whatever you want to be called, right?
Well, we didn't buy into that investment pool. We made a decision not to buy into the investment pool. We made a decision to buy a segregated account, keep our own assets in our own name.
You're talking about a segregated account since it wasn't segregated.
Well, it was originally, and then the money was stolen.
No, but they were going to, and you expected them to be speculating with your money the same way they were speculating with the shareholders' money.
Again, Your Honor, there's no evidence in this case that the losses were caused by market speculation. Everyone had an expectation that they were going to invest these in futures and various derivatives.
How are they going to use your money? I mean, I can understand you might have a claim for conversion if they stole it, but how are they going to use your money?
Our money was to be held in a separate segregated account. Right. We were the only owner of that money. We could withdraw it and cash in it at any time. The commodity pool investors, they bought common shares in either Turks and Caicos or British Virgin Island companies. They subscribed to those shares. The
but
subscriptions.
Their investment, if you put aside fraud, their investment return would be identical to yours. Would be identical to them. Right?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. Some of the funds had different objectives.
No, wait a second. Let's forget about the fraud. They were going to make the same trades in your account as the. This is related to Judge Sykes's question. This was not self-directed. They were going to make the same trades in your account as they made in the shareholders' account, right? Now, this is very different from the creditor-shareholder relation, isn't it?
It's really not, Your Honor, because ultimately the laws of these other jurisdictions provides that those people get paid after everybody else gets paid. So if you consolidate everything into one pool, you still have creditors. We're still a creditor. They're still a shareholder. There's nothing that says that, well, if it wasn't like a regular situation, you as a shareholder then get to step up. And I think that's what 510 and that's what Holliday & Martin, those cases say, is that when you're dealing with shareholders, that the equity is you pay the other creditors. Now, this was a meaningful distinction, that we had lots of rights that they didn't have. We didn't pool our money with them. We didn't have to go to shareholder meetings in the British Virgin Islands. We didn't have to comply with redemption requirements. We weren't subject to BV law as whether we could take money out. So their bargain was substantially different than ours, and that was the bargain they knowingly undertook. And in our situation, although it's not the classic corporate shareholder distinction, the same rule applies. Creditors get paid first. We're at the same level with the landlord, the suppliers, the telephone company.
No, you're not like a landlord. You're not like a landlord. The landlord is providing a service to a company which is distinct from the shareholders who provide equity as a backup to and with hope of speculative earnings.
Exactly.
A creditor. The reason that creditors, what differentiates the status of creditor and shareholder, is that a creditor is not the recipient of the residual profits and doesn't bear the residual losses of the company. He has a fixed return. There's a risk, but his return is supposed to be fixed, and he's got a lower upside than the shareholders and a higher downside. That's the difference between a creditor and a shareholder. That difference doesn't exist in this case. Because the money you invested was an identical risk, talking about business risk, not fraud, the same business risk as the shareholder money, because it was going to be invested the same way.
But again,
and the return would be the same. You were going to get not a creditor-type return. You were going to get a speculative return.
But again, Your Honor, the way we invested was as a creditor.
No, you were going to get a speculative return. You were not going to get an interest rate, which is what creditors get. You weren't going to get an interest rate, am I correct?
We were going to get a market rate based on the performance.
You were not going to get an interest rate.
That's correct, Your Honor. But our conversion claim, which the other creditors don't have, because if money was stolen from the funds, the funds have a claim against the wrongdoers. We have a direct claim against the wrongdoers for stealing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Bao. Mr. Salinger?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Richard Saldinger on behalf of Rob Evans and Associate. Your Honor, I think now is an understanding. We are the receiver. The CFTC is not in this.
Doesn't the receiver have a duty to pick an effective method of notice? This is very serious. You're telling a creditor, if you don't act within 45 days, you're finished. Now, that's significant. Now, don't you have a duty to try to find an effective means of notification, like email? Why do you email them?
We agree, Your Honor,
why didn't you call up, find out who the contact person is, send them an email?
Your Honor, to put this in a context for the court.
Answer my question.
I am, Your Honor. The reason that we didn't have the email, the records in this case were not in the receiver's possession. The records were in Lakeshore's possession. We didn't have a strong record or a strong documentation, if you will. So we went to the.
Why are you wiping out people after 45 days if you don't have decent records?
By using the address on the account statements.
You have an address on the account statement. It's Bank in Andorra. Why don't you call up the bank and say, look, who do I say? We have this deadline we want to notify you of. So who do I send it to?
Your Honor, there were 985 investors who actually made claims in this receivership. The amount of other potential investors is well beyond that point, and the receiver has limited assets. So
what do you mean the receiver has limited assets?
The receiver's duty, Your Honor, obviously, is to try to...
Duty is not assets. Why do you say the receiver has limited assets?
It has the assets.
You have to deal with the CFTC, don't you?
The
Or who appointed the receiver? Who appointed the receiver?
The court, Your Honor, the district court.
So you go to the court and you say, look, there are 980 creditors. I have to set some kind of, deadline for their claims. And, it's going to cost me X. I have to find out the contact person to each of these creditors.
Your Honor, we did go to the court. We proposed a procedure for this with the 45-day notice. And the court, who is the district court who is closest to this and is monitoring the receivership and has the discretion to make the call, provided and granted our motion and said that the 45 days notice through the account statements was sufficient.
45 days. I'm complaining about your very casual way of notifying these people.
Your Honor,
all you have is a business address of a big bank.
Based on the records that the receiver had in its possession, that was our best method of providing notice.
No, because you had the address of the bank. You knew the bank was the claimant. All you had to do was call up the bank and ask who the contact person is on this loan, on this investment.
Your Honor, I
simplest thing in the world.
I agree
that you have the assets to make a phone call.
Your Honor, I agree that is one method that it could be done.
Your method wasn't good because you're sending it to some large building, and who knows who's collecting the mail and what they do with it.
Your Honor, in the receiver's view and in the district court agreed that where you have the address where the investors are receiving the information.
This is ridiculous. What if the creditor is General Motors? What do? You send it corporate headquarters, General Motors, somewhere where there are 10,000 people?
It's where they were receiving their account statements. And then we also set up the website. And the website provided all the links with all the notices and all the information. And the district court also found that was an additional...
I don't understand why you didn't email him.
Your Honor, to put this in a context, this was a...
If you want to say they're clumsier than you are, all right, you can say that. But you're wiping out... I guess this claim would be worth about $3 million. You wipe it out by sending it to some corporate headquarters?
Your Honor, there is no perfect... there's no perfect system.
Oh,
the receiver
come on.
Used...
You just... Call them up, find a contact person, send them an email. If that isn't perfect, I don't know what's perfect.
Well, Your Honor, the receiver chose this course. Hindsight, we could sit here and...
What's hindsight about it? This is your business, right? What's more basic in the receivership business than making sure that creditors are notified?
We attempted to do so, Your Honor.
In a very clumsy way. You ought to be embarrassed.
Your Honor, in focusing on AmBank and to talk, because I have to do my best and want to answer all the court's questions and address both AmBank and GAMAG within my time, the notice that was sent was not returned as undeliverable. It was sent to an address.
Where's the signature?
If you look, actually, Your Honor, that in the FedEx...
It's not a signature.
It says that it was signed for.
Where's the signature?
That we don't have the signature, Your Honor.
Why don't you?
Those were the records that we were able to obtain on the
well,
FedEx.
Well, where's the
I don't,
signature?
I don't
Did you ask FedEx? FedEx says the signature is unavailable. Now, why would it be unavailable?
Why would it be unavailable, Your Honor? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, what does FedEx say?
FedEx provided us with their documentation.
You asked FedEx. Why is there no signature?
I don't know, Your Honor, if that question was asked.
Well, it's not in the record, right?
It is not in the record.
Well, why didn't you ask them?
Your Honor, I think that
There's some mystery. I don't think the fact that there's no C stamp makes any difference, because when they copy over and scribble, and then when they try to type out the scribble, I'm sure they often get it completely wrong. What I don't understand is the significance of the signature not being available.
Your Honor, I can't tell you why the signature was not available. Your Honor,
I think as a receiver, you'd be concerned about a FedEx that may not have been delivered.
Well, I think that it was delivered, and
why don't they have a signature if it was delivered?
Your Honor, I don't think there is a reason to dispute.
You must use FedEx a lot. You seem to like that in your receivership business. Use FedEx. So aren't you interested in FedEx's reliability?
We are, Your Honor. And
why wouldn't you want to investigate to find why they didn't have a signature?
Your Honor, in the normal course, when FedEx provides to the sender a receipt that says signed for by, that to us is confirmation of receipt.
This is not a standard. Standard confirmation, is it?
I think it is, Your Honor.
Did it say signature is not available?
Well, it says that it's signed for, Your Honor. So I think that's something that the receiver can reasonably rely upon.
Do your standard receipts from FedEx say signature not available?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What was the question?
Do the standard receipts you get from FedEx, which must be numerous, do they say signature not available?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know the answer to the question.
No signature is currently available for this shipment. Please check again later for the signatures. So that implies that the signature facsimile from the transaction is somehow logged into the system electronically in a different way than the hard copy of the receipt. So it's probably available somewhere, but nobody thought to find it, either you or your opponent.
It's possible, Your Honor. It's possible. But with the receiver and the numerosity, if you will, of the number of investors here and what it was trying to manage.
Let me ask you this. Why are you here? That is, what interest do you have with regard to the Andorra Bank? If the Andorra Bank gets it has a claim. I mean, it was untimely, but it has a claim. $3 million. You've created a reserve for this amount. Why not give it to them?
Your Honor, we have no interest in Andorra Bank. We do have an interest and obligation to all of the investors. And the question
Do you have an obligation to the other investors to be hyper-technical and say, 45 days sacred?
We have an obligation, Your Honor, to the other investors to get
no equitable or legal claim to the 45 days being strictly enforced against others, right?
Your Honor, yes, is the answer to your question.
So why are you here? What's your interest?
Our interest is to running this receivership in a manner, Your Honor, that gets the investors there.
You're paid for it. So why not give them the money?
The money that was reserved, Your Honor, was set aside after the...
acknowledged. The money has been set aside. You can give it to them now. You don't have to bother the other creditors. You're not taking any money out of their pockets. That's why you created the reserve.
Your Honor, the concern at the time when the order was...
Well, but what about now?
It's the same concern, Your Honor, what this could
do... Why are you here? What's your current concern?
Concern is the same concern back then, where there's a situation where this opens up Pandora's box, if you will,
It doesn't. There's no Pandora's box here.
Or other investors
can.
Why
don't you just say, look, it's a recognized claim. We set up the reserve. It's a mess. You didn't do a good job in notice, and the Andorra Bank did a very bad job, maybe a worse job, but it was a big screw up. But there's no question that their claim is valid, and there's no injury to anybody. No one's rights would be infringed by giving them their $3 million.
Well, what you're asking...
In fact, you're going to have more cost, because you like that, you get reimbursed with a profit. Because now, if we affirm and dissolve the reserve is dissolved, you have to send a little check to those 1,000 creditors.
Your Honor, what we're attempting to do...
Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's what happens to it. So you're going to have a lot of mail cost in order to distribute the $3 million to the undeserving other creditors.
Your Honor, what we're attempting to do here is make sure that the problem does not become a larger problem. And there's nothing to stop other investors from coming in and saying, well, we would have also filed a claim late, but we were relying on the district court's order. And to come in, and this is what the district court was concerned about.
There'd be no reserve for them, so they're out of luck.
After 2 years.
Your argument that you don't want to go, I mean, it would be ridiculous, of course, to write to the 980 or however they are and say, oh, by the way, we overpaid you. You'll have to send us a check, you know, for 1% of what you receive. That's ridiculous. I agree with that completely. It's just, it strikes me odd that at this stage, when you created the reserve and when the claim is acknowledged, you don't just pay it and end the business.
Well, Your Honor, I think that what we're doing is trying to uphold what the district court did, and they followed the law within their discretion. There was prejudice to the debtor. There was no reasonable explanation for the delay.
Prejudice
notice,
to the debtor? What are you talking about?
There was prejudice to the receivership or to the other
What's
investors
the prejudice
at the time.
To the receivership?
If we were to have allowed, if the court would have granted AmBank's motion to file a late claim, basically...
You're saying there would have been prejudice had you had to go around and collect money from the other creditors.
There are also...
At this stage, it doesn't matter anymore. There's no more prejudice to the receivership.
But the question...
You're going to be charging more money, right? You're going to be getting a larger receivership fee because you're going to be busy sending out the 980 checks, and some are going to get lost in the mail, and they're going to come back and complain to you and say your notice is inadequate.
Your Honor, I would think that would hopefully be a de minimis cost to the receiver just to send out the checks, as compared to the prejudice back at the time where numbers would have had to be revised. The court said she would have to open up for new objections, and the whole distribution would have been
$1,000.
Sorry?
It'll cost you several hundred thousand dollars.
And the court would open it up for new objections, and the distribution
Why
had already
they
been
open to. Up to new objections.
The district court felt that she had approved the distribution motion with exactly what all the investors were going to get. If she granted AmBank's motion to file a late claim, she would have given everyone a new opportunity to object.
Now, that's
the distribution
ancient history.
Would have,
but there'd be no opportunity to object now.
At this point, Your Honor, I guess that would be up to whether they would object or not. I think
they
could.
Object? What would their objection be?
Why would their objection be?
No right of theirs. No right of theirs has been infringed. Right of theirs has been infringed.
If I may, Your Honor.
They have no claim to that $3 million.
Your Honor. If 985 investors followed the rules the right way and did what was necessary to get their distribution, and one investor sat on its rights for over 2 years, ignored the notice they received in the mail,
right,
and only came in after the fact, after waiting more than 6 months after their claim was due, more than 30 days after they found out by simply pushing a button that they needed to do something, if I'm one of those
Why
investors...
Why should the others care?
Why should they get less money when they follow the rules
in
their own place?
Well, okay.
I think here, Your Honor, where the idea is to do what's fair and equitable to the receivership as a whole, not to take each case on an individual basis, because that would be impossible for the receiver to do.
The reserve for this claim was made after the district court's decision?
Yes, Your Honor, it was.
We evaluate the district court's decision based on equity at the time it was made, not on the basis of a later reserve for the claim.
If I understand the court's statement, the court's opinion that's being appealed is the March 5th, 2010 order denying AmBank's motion for leave to file a late claim. So I respectfully represent that it's the prejudice that the court would be at the time. Subsequently, AmBank filed, after the court granted its distribution motion, AmBank filed a motion to hold up that distribution. They also filed an appeal. And what was then resolved in short order by agreement, because there were additional monies that had become available that will hold back at that point in time. But this was after the district court had all the briefing and weighed the argument and made its decision.
The chronology matters because of the standard of review. It's a very deferential standard of review. We're reviewing the district court's equitable determination on that claim and equitable denial of the claim as of the time it was made, and later developments such as the establishment of this reserve. That doesn't authorize us to reweigh the equities as a reviewing court.
Okay, Your Honor.
Are you a fiduciary of AmBank?
I'm sorry?
Are you a fiduciary of AmBank?
No, Your Honor.
You're not a fiduciary of the creditors?
We were appointed by the court.
Fiduciary?
To the creditors? I think they owe their duties to the court, Your Honor, to run the receivership.
Answer. I don't know the answer, but is a receiver a fiduciary?
Fiduciary duty to the creditor.
A trustee in bankruptcy is a fiduciary, isn't he? Of the unsecured creditors, right? Well, why isn't a receiver a fiduciary?
Well, because the receiver their role is to accumulate the assets and distribute them and to collect in the most fair
exactly
and equitable way.
That's exactly what a trustee in bankruptcy does.
But I don't think that they have I don't believe, Your Honor, that they have a fiduciary duty to each of the individual creditors.
In bankruptcy is a fiduciary of each of the creditors. Why isn't a receiver? He has the exact same function.
Your Honor,
you don't know. So let's go on to GAMAG. What you have anything to say about GAMAG?
Well, Your Honor, I think the court's questions addressed my points. GAMAG says it's a creditor. But there's no evidence of that, and they're not a creditor. And indeed, they entered into the same speculative investments. If I can just direct the court, just by way of comparison, to the language in GAMAG's portfolio management agreement, which is contained in the receiver supplemental index under RA 155, and it talks about in the first paragraph how they're investing in exchange traded financial derivative contracts. It also talks about that they're giving LS3 sole discretion. It's a managed account. And just by way of comparison, in the brief that GAMAG filed, so this is part of the record, and is document number 698, Exhibit 5 is a copy, by way of example, of what they attached as a confidential explanatory memorandum, one of these funds that's been alluded to. And indeed, Your Honor, on page 3 of that memorandum, it talks about investment objective and strategy, and it talks about the exact same exchange-traded financial derivatives. In their portfolio management agreement, they checked a box about speculative trading. They were investing in the exact same program, taking on the same risk. There was no equity cushion involved for them to consider. And they knew what they were getting into, and all the cases that they talk about the Holiday Mart case on a couple different occasions, just to quickly distinguish it, those were claims of debenture holders subordinate to claims of general trade creditors who have a fixed debt that they are owed. They're not taking on any risk. And here, both parties took on the risk that comes with investing in securities, in financial derivative programs.
They negotiated a separate provision for how their funds were to be treated.
Your Honor, I don't believe that that's true. They're the only one who's made that claim in this manner. All the other investors made the claim in the same course. None of them. We don't. In fact, I would highly doubt, and this is not in the record one way or the other, that they were the only one who signed the portfolio management agreement. They were the only one who's taken this and tried to get ahead of everyone else. They tried at the bankruptcy court level. Judge Squire said they should be treated like all other investors. They tried it with Judge Manning, and now they're trying it here. They are not a creditor in any sense of the word, and the absolute priority rule should not apply.
Does the record show, I think I asked your opponent, but does the record show anything about why they wanted to do this or why any company, any of the investors, because you're suggesting probably others did too, what their motives would be? Is it regulatory or something, or German regulation?
Nothing in the record. There's nothing in the record, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Salinger.
Thank you, Judge.
So, Mr. Etkin, do you have anything further? Okay. And Mr. Bao, do you have anything? Sure.
Your Honor, I think the documents speak for themselves as to why GAMIC choose a different device. If you look at basically the Lakeshore confidential memo for the funds and the agreements for the accounts, they basically provide that your funds are there, they're available. And we did not lose any money here because of any market risk. This is not a case where they invested and the market went the wrong way.
I take it there's no evidence about why this portfolio management agreement might be attractive to some investors and not others. It might have to do with government regulations in different countries. It might have to do with tax, right? But we don't have that developed, do we?
Well, I think it's clear in the record under the terms of this.
I understand you've got terms, but you had the option to choose this agreement and or the shareholder. Now, a lot of the investors, maybe all but you, for all we know, chose the other form. So I'm interested in why a company would prefer this form to another form, right?
The assets
remain. Other hedge funds, they're interested in security also, but they didn't choose this. So what did they think they were getting by not having a portfolio manager?
There's a significant advantage by having your portfolio management is that you could liquidate that account at any time.
What's the advantage of not having it? Because most of the investors didn't have it. So what are they getting out of not having it?
I think there was a disadvantage that you could pool these in larger pools, but you were required, you had to redeem your shares. They could suspend your redemption rights. So if sometime the fund assets got to enough of a level, the manager of the fund could say there are no more redemptions. So there were significant limitations.
Limitations on what?
Being able to get your money out of these funds.
Who are we talking about?
From the funds, from the British Virgin Islands.
What investors are we talking about who are affected by these limitations?
Purchasers of the common shares.
Yes, so my question was, what's the offsetting benefit to being a purchaser of common shares, which is apparently what most of the investors, and I said maybe all but you, preferred. There must have been something in it for them. They're sophisticated hedge funds, I suppose. Why'd they do it?
I suspect maybe the fees were spread out and diluted because it was over a larger pool, but I don't really see any advantage of being in those.
Okay.
But just to address the one legal issue, Your Honors, okay. These other people bought securities. We didn't buy securities. And I think my example of the landlord probably wasn't a good one. We're in the same position of essentially a tort claimant. If someone from Lakeshore had negligently operated their motor vehicle and injured someone, in a bankruptcy case or a receivership, those creditors, whether it's a tort claimant, whether it's a contract claimant, they share alike. Equity security holders get paid after. Now, the fact that we assume the same risk, again, none of our loss was caused by that assumed risk. Our money may have been stolen so they could try and offset risk in the funds. But again, we were a creditor. We're not an equity security holder.
Suppose a mortgagee's deal with a business was that instead of getting a fixed interest rate or a variable rate, you know, in the usual way they vary, it said, in lieu of interest, we want a percentage of your profits. Would that mortgagee's in bankruptcy still be treated as a creditor?
He would, Your Honor. Equity kickers were very popular back in the 80s and 90s. They were supplements to interest payable on mortgage loans. So basically that issue's been out there. Again, the question is your contract. We had a contract. Keep our money in a segregated account. Give it back. What's left?
Was there a standard contract that they offered to these investors?
It was, Your Honor. There was a form. I don't know what they offered to other people, but it was a form contract that we signed.
And you indicated you wanted to modify it.
We wanted the managed account form.
So it was a choice. You're given a choice.
You could
Everyone
have had
is given a choice, and you chose the portfolio management agreement, sure. And the others didn't. So
many of the others chose to buy stock in the funds.
So there were standard both, but you took one and they took another.
That's my understanding.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Balk and Mr. Etkin and Mr. Salinger, we thank you for your efforts. We have your clients. Our next